Recorded live. This is an interactive podcast designed for audience participation. Come talk, text chat, or listen live at TalkShoe.com.
Hello, my name is Matt Wilson, and this is the Boring Beige Box podcast. Actually, this is my first time in doing a episode of Boring Beige Box on TalkShoe. It is a great service. I found out about TalkShoe through Net at Night, which is hosted by Leo Laporte and Amber MacArthur. And basically, it seemed to me to be like a great forum to do some, you know, live call-in type of format. So if you want to, you can check out my Boring Beige Box podcast. You're probably wondering what that means. Hold on one second. Okay, this is my first time doing the TalkShoe thing, so it's going to be a bumpy ride. So hold on tight. No, just kidding. You can check out my podcast at www.boringbeigebox.com. And basically the idea of Boring Beige Box is that's what old computers were. Boring Beige Box podcast is all about retro computing, specifically in the late 80s to early to mid 90s. And I basically discuss different topics related to computing and computers during that time period, whether it be hardware or software or, online services or communities, and kind of take you back to the old school days when you were possibly a teenager or a person growing up during that era, kind of before the internet, and, when there were online services like America Online, CompuServe, Prodigy, and other online services like that. And so it was a great time. You know, I really enjoyed that time. It was when I was a teenager growing up and enjoying the early days of computing for me, when all the computers were a boring beige color. Nowadays computers are gray or black or, you know, very cool. But back then there were these huge machines that sat on your desk and were the color of beige. So anyway, let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to talk a little bit about the website and the podcast and kind of where we're headed and what we want to do. So if you hold on one second, I'm going to bring up some notes. Okay, let's go ahead and I'll tell you a little bit about the website. If you check out boringbeigebox.com, and you the site's very basic. I just have some simple information regarding the show. And if you look at the top, there is the podcast info. If you click on that, I host all of my podcasts on Libsyn. That's boringbeigebox.libsyn.com. And there are some past episodes listed there. I've done about 16 episodes. Now, I haven't been as active as I was earlier in the spring, but you can definitely go back and listen to the episodes that I've recorded. Now, let's see here. Okay, you can subscribe to it. I'm also in iTunes. If you use iTunes, you can if you search, do a search in iTunes for retro computing, you will bring up my Boring Beige Box. I kind of got the idea from another podcast called Retro Bits, and It was it's by a guy named Earl Evans. If you look up Retrobits, I believe his site is retrobits.libsyn.com. That's libsyn.com. He touches on an era from like the 70s to 80s, and he does a really good show. He's had he's done lots of episodes. Okay, let's take a look at. I'm going to look. There's a couple other shows going on right now. It is Sunday, Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Central Time, 11 p.m. Eastern. And I was just in another show called Leah LaPorte Fans Broadcast Companion. I'm going to take a look at this show real quick, see if anybody in here. Okay, there are people talking. Hold on 1 second. Actually, I'm talking to. Just talking to Wayne in Akron on the Net at Night show. Yes, thank you. He's promoting my show right now. Yeah, just kind of typing to. Okay. So, yeah, they're getting ready to end. I'm going to close. Okay. I'm going to close him out. Anyway, that was. There's a great show right after Net at Night, you know, is the biggest show right now on TalkShoe. But there's a couple of after party, I guess you can call them, shows that are on. And one of them is a Leah LaPorte Fans Broadcast Companion. And I was in there talking to Wayne in Akron, and he just plugged the podcast. But anyway, this is, you know, I just said, hey, let's do this tonight. Let's start this. This is a lot more informal. It's not as scripted as a regular podcast. You know, doing the talk show, you know, live talk casts is a lot easier to just to jump right in and just get out there and chat. There's a couple shows going on right now, different ones going on. So I don't, doesn't seem like that. I have any listeners right now. Sunday night is a really good night. It seems to be the most popular. I probably will do this show on Sundays, maybe sometime sooner than this time period, which is you know, kind of late for some people that have to work on Monday, especially on the East Coast. But I'll probably do it a little bit later, maybe before Net at Night, depending on what else is going on. But see, right now, I think everyone that uses uses TalkShoe is probably in some of the Net at Night after party shows. I'm going to look at another one. There's another one called Geek Riot that I'm going to take a look at and see who is in there. Let's see. Yeah, there's a bunch of people in there. Just yeah, so okay, yeah, I'm in another one now called A Geek Riot, which I'm just kind of promoting the show, and also hopefully I get some people to come on in. Some good stuff going on at some of these other shows. Okay. So anyway, just to talk a little bit about retrocomputing. Retrocomputing is a fairly new term. I would say that people over the past couple years have, you know, began to get into or involved in retrocomputing. I know back when I was in college, emulation was real big, and it still is today. You know, emulating consoles like the Nintendo or Super Nintendo, Genesis, all the video game consoles is extremely popular. I've always used a lot of different emulation programs, and I think just fairly recently, emulating older computer systems has become pretty popular. I have, there's a great program out there called DOSBox, which is a phenomenal program where you can use it to play older computer games, and I love it. It very accurately emulates a 386 machine. So hold on one second. I need to see. I'm having a little bit of problems here. Hold on. Okay. Check. Okay. I'm just looking at some of the other shows that are going on right now. So basically, retrocomputing is it's starting to get a little bit. It's becoming more prevalent for a lot of people that are into computers. It's the idea of hey, I've got I found this old computer at a garage sale or yard sale or something like that, or the flea market. And, it's real funny. I've been obsessed with this for many, many years. When I started to get, computers when I was young, I always would, you remember almost every computer that you ever had. And I went through many computers starting in high school. I would, save up, buy a computer, and then I would sell it like in a year or so, because I was always afraid that it would be, it would become obsolete and I need to get something better so that I don't lose my money and I have to save up again. So I would always use the money that I had saved for a new system. So I kind of went through that vicious cycle through the years. But over time I would reflect back and say, oh man, I remember this great machine that I had, and I really used it a lot. That was kind of the years where I discovered a lot of things, and for me, kind of a golden age of when I really got into computers was back in around 91, 92. I was very determined to save up for my my own computer. My parents didn't have a lot of money. They could get me video game systems, but never enough for a computer. And this is back in the day when the greatest machines were the 486 based machines, and they were $3,000, $4,000. I mean, they were insane. Like, you can get a top-of-the-line PC now for under $2,000. So, but back then, it was just astronomical. But, it was just crazy, the amount of money that you'd have to spend for a good machine. So, I would always be on the lookout for ways to save money and to get a system. So the first system that I bought, I had to, it was the summer of 1992, and I worked all summer, and I saved up for a, I saved $800 for a 386-based machine, which I ordered from California. And, man, this thing, I still have the original invoice. And it was a 386. You know what? I'm going to hold on a second. I'm going to get that invoice. This is, I mean, if you remember this stuff, I mean, you remember your first system. You know, you remember what it looked like, what you did, you know, what you did with it, the specs, everything. Hold on one second. Okay. Yeah, this is a great, great system. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at this. This is the invoice for this was from August 7th, 1992. It was a 386, 25 megahertz SX with 2 megabytes of memory. It had. It had, remember, the IDE controller cards used to be not on board, but it was a separate card. So it had an IDE controller. It was a separate card. Came with a floppy drive. It was a mini tower, 200-watt power supply. Came with a keyboard, the hard drive. It was a 40 megabyte, that's megabyte, not gigabyte, 40 megabyte hard drive. Extremely small. Think about that. The Photoshop file is 40 megabytes now. I mean, this is insane. This is 92. This is only, it's like this is, you know, this was 10, this is 15 years ago. Wait a minute. 14 years ago. I mean, the hard drive, the size of hard drives has grown exponentially for so many years. It came with a VGA graphics card. It was the maximum resolution was 1024 by 768, 256K, no, 512 kilobytes of RAM on it. Just think about that. So, and it came with a monitor. And it was $800. And it was very expensive for me at the time. So, hold on one second. Having a little bit of difficulties again. Hold on one second. So, you know, basically, you know, this, I guess you could say, you know, Boring Beige Box is that term or that I guess you could say, idea that a journalist at one time used to make fun of the old computers that just were beige in color. And it was kind of a poke fun at the old systems, and the new systems coming out were cooler. They had colors, designs, you know, a lot more modern. I mean, if you can remember, you know, the huge machines that sat on your desk, and we've kind of gone away from that. I mean, we have the cool, you know, we still have towers that sit beside your desk, and, you know, people trick them out, and they have the cool lights and different designs that you can do to them. And, you know, but back in the day, you know, late 80s, early 90s, it was a different time. You know, the machines were huge. They were bulky. They were heavy. They were made out of steel. And they cost a heck of a lot more than they did, than they do now. So basically, you know, that was my first computer. It was a 386, 25 megahertz with 2 megabytes of memory on board, blazing fast. And, you know, floppy drive, hard drive was very measly, 40 megabytes, but it did the job. I had VGA color, color monitor. I didn't have a sound card. There wasn't a CD-ROM drive, nothing like that. I didn't even have a modem to dial up. That came after a couple months later. So that was back in 1992. That began my journey through collecting or you know, buying computers over the years. So now, as I'm older, I kind of look back on those days and, you know, with nostalgia and think about playing King's Quest or Monkey Island 2 or, you know, some of the other great classic LucasArts games, Ultima 7. All the Ultima games were awesome. I spent hours playing Ultima 7. You know, that was, it seemed like a simpler time. You know, the online community wasn't as big as it is today. You know, back then it was all about online services. I remember, you know, once I got, you know, my first modem, 2400 baud, you know, extremely fast modem, I remember dialing up to the Sierra network. And it was incredible. You could play against other people online. And it was a really cool interface. It had graphics, I mean, great graphics that looked like a Sierra game. You know, it was incredible. You could chat, you know, some of the first chat rooms. There was email. And this was back in like 92. And it was great. I mean, it wasn't like the internet we know it today, but it was sort of the same idea. Online communities. And I really feel that, like, Sierra Network at the time, it was developed by Sierra Online. You know, Ken and Roberta Williams, who did all the King's Quest games and so many other games, and they developed the Sierra Network. And you can, if you search on Google for the Sierra Network, it eventually became the Imagination Network. That we have a listener in the show. Yeah, Leisure Suit Larry and Police Quest. Those are some of the other great Sierra classic games. Spent hours playing those. You know, my parents would never let me get Leisure Suit Larry because it was R-rated. But you know, had a lot of fun doing that. And in the Sierra Network, you could go online, and there was a place called Larry Land, you could go and play in the casino. And you know, that was my first experience with you know, talking dirty in the chat rooms and stuff. And it was pretty crazy, you know. It was definitely fun times as a teenager, you know, and especially, I mean, I was into, you know, drama productions in school, and I had a lot of friends, but I wasn't in the, you know, the real popular crowd. And so being able to be, you know, to get online and to make a lot of friends out there in the internet world, especially older people, I always thought it was just the coolest thing in the world to meet people out there. So, you know, with the Sierra Network, that was kind of the first experience I had with, you know, with online chatting and with email. And one of the other great things about Sierra Network was an area called Medieval Land. So up in the right-hand corner, there was a game you could play called The Shadows of Eusebius, and it was an online role-playing game. It was one of the first graphical MMORPGs, which is massively multiplayer online role-playing game, which nowadays, you know, the most popular one out is World of Warcraft, and EverQuest was another popular one. But this was like the forerunner of the graphical MMORPG. Now, before that, there were text-based online role-playing games called MUDs, which stood for multi-user dungeons. But, you know, Shadows of Eusebius was the first graphical one, and I spent hours and hours playing that. It was awesome. A lot of guilds or a lot of groups of people are still together today out of Shadows of Eusebius that still play even today up to, you know, World of Warcraft. So, and this is, you're talking, this is back in, like, 1992, 91, 92, 93, 94, you know, some of the early days of the online services. So Shadows of Eusebius was awesome, really great. You could customize your own characters. You could join parties and go with people and explore dungeons and fight monsters and build characters. And there was online events that happened that were put on by the GMs, the games masters. And it was incredible. So there was that, and then they came out with another expansion called Fates of Twinian, which I didn't really get that much into, but it was great for a while it lasted. Another, talking just about online services, America Online, became real popular. I mean, I used America Online back in the beginning when it was, version 1.0, and back in the day when it was just maybe 200,000 users and that small. I mean, I think at its peak it was, in the tens of millions of users or 100 million. I don't know. It was insane. But back in the day when it was a little bit smaller, I used America Online a lot. And, as a teenager, you get into some questionable activities and, the whole wear scene and, downloading, games and all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's really funny because I remember, everything was through dial-up. So you would have to, download things overnight. The files were enormous, and downloading off of a 2400 baud modem took forever. So I remember downloading games like King's Quest VI or whatever, and it would take days to download the games. And I always remember, waiting for my mom to go to bed and starting the download, and I would download, you would request the files in AOL chat rooms, and the files would be sent to you through email. And, so you'd have to download the files from the email. There would be file attachments to the email. And I remember, downloading something like King's Quest VI and just starting the file every night for like a week or two, after my mom went to bed. And I would get an 8-hour block before my dad would get up in the morning, and the phone line would be tied up. My mom would kill me, if she ever, like in the evening before she went to bed, and she'd pick up the phone and she would hear those crazy noises of the modem. And, she used to hate that. And it was always like a big issue. And so I would have to wait till late at night to start the download. And, it literally took weeks to get King's Quest. So anyway, it was definitely an interesting time. We really take for granted broadband these days and how fast, like my Comcast connection is 8 megabits download speed downstream, and I think the upstream is 768K, but 8 megabits. I remember being in college when like ISDN was like amazing. It was like 64K or 128K for dual channel ISDN, and I worked at a place and that was like amazingly fast. And then when we got a T1, I was like, it just blew everyone out of the water. And if you were on campus, I went to University of South Carolina. If you had an apartment on campus, you could hook into the university network, and it was like a T3, and it was just blew everyone away. But now at home, for like $40 a month, I can get 8 megabits down speed. I mean, that's insane. That's like, a T1 is 1.5 megabits. So compare that to just, 14 years ago, or even shorter than that, back in the late 90s, people were still using dial-up. And even at 56K, that's insane, 56K. And so think about downloading stuff at 2400 baud. And, it goes even back before that. Guys that, started off with 300 baud. So, we really take it for granted sometimes, the download speed. So, but I remember doing that and, constantly dialing up to America Online and getting online. It's just that whole world of the online service really just blew me away when I was young. It opened up a whole new world that I really felt as a young person that it was only me and very few others that had access to that world. I did not know a lot of people that were on America Online that I knew in person that were around me. And kids were into it somewhat, but more of the nerdy kids and the geeks and stuff like myself. So it just, it wasn't the same. I mean, there was some people that were into, you know, AOL and like instant messaging and stuff. And I had a girlfriend and stuff that was into that. And, you know, a couple other girls I knew had instant messenger, but it was expensive and the service was, you know, it was expensive, tied up the phone line, you know, so, but anyway, you know, it was definitely a great time. There was another game that I used to play on America Online called Neverwinter Nights. And that was another one of the early graphical MMORPGs, which was a really fun game. It was kind of buggy, and there was always tons of people trying to get on. It was only allowed like 500 people at a time. So you think about, you know, there were hundreds of thousands of America Online users. Think about how many people would want to play that. So, you know, it was always like waiting in line to play it. And it was pretty fun. It was based on the SSI Gold Box series of games, kind of the same interface, but it was definitely a lot of fun. I played that for a while. Some of the other games I played after that was Meridian 59, which was one of the really forerunners for first person MMORPGs, kind of, you know, forerunner for like an EverQuest, even though it was years, you know, a couple years before EverQuest came out. So I played that. Some of the other online services I used was Prodigy. If you remember Prodigy, that was a lot of fun. You know, I think emails, like they charged emails. You got a certain amount of emails for a month. Okay, take care, listener. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye. So with Prodigy, I remember that you got a certain amount of emails free a month, but after that it was 25 cents an email, which I mean, just think about that. Think about having to spend an email costing you 25 cents per email. I can't count. I send probably at least maybe 30 emails or more a day. That's like that's on a slow day, you know. I mean, imagine paying 25 cents per email. It's insane. But Prodigy had that. That was part of their service. So I could tell that they probably their model wouldn't last very long. But anyway, I used Prodigy a lot, and they had some great features, some very, they were forerunners for stuff like e-commerce, online shopping. You could book your airline on this, and this was before the web. This is before people began to use the web as e-commerce. Or going online to book, you know, travel. But on Prodigy, you could book your airlines book a ticket on an airline on Prodigy. You could buy stuff all within the Prodigy online service. Prodigy had message boards, some of that early stuff. I used CompuServe a little bit, but that was more for business users. And I didn't really get into that a whole lot. They had some pretty good message boards, though. So that whole era of the online service, there were some gaming ones that were kind of prevalent. There was one called Genie, which was you could play online, but I never really got into that. But that era of the online service lasted for a very short time. You know, the Internet came in full force. And I'm not the Internet, but really the web portion of the Internet. You know, the Internet is comprised of multiple things. You know, email, news groups, the web, FTP. You know, there's a lot of different components to the Internet. And the web portion and websites just blew up around the mid-90s. And it really kind of sounded the death knell for online services, and also, which I definitely want to talk about, bulletin board systems, which, you know, really bulletin board systems were almost like, you know, the underground online communities compared to online services. There's a great documentary on bulletin boards called BBS Documentary. If you go to bbsdocumentary.com and check it out, you'll thoroughly enjoy it. I definitely recommend purchasing it. It's a great documentary. If you just go to bbsdocumentary.com, it's a really great guy named Jason Scott who wrote it. and or excuse me, who directed it, and I love it. It's a great documentary. I'm looking real quick at this is amazing. There are still like hundreds of people in the net at night. Oh, maybe I'm disconnected. It looks like there's hundreds of people still, or like, you know, 100 people or so still in the net at night chat room. I'm just looking. Sorry for a minute. I'm just going to take a look at some of these things here. There's a lot of other stuff going on TalkShoe right now. It looks like I'm just seeing what other shows are live. I'm trying to kind of figure out what would be the best time to do this show where there are not as many people. In some of the other popular shows, I'm looking at Geek Riot again to see who is in there. Yeah, there's a bunch of people still in there. I'm probably going to join that in a little bit. Okay. So anyway, I'm trying to think where I was at. Bulletin board systems, yes. So BBSs. I remember dialing up to bulletin board systems, you know, looking for games, looking for files, and, you know, always getting in big trouble for dialing up to, you know, long-distance bulletin board systems. And 1 month, like everyone that grew up or was a teenager in the 80s or 90s, you know, if they dialed up to BBSs on the computer, you always got that big phone bill. And sure enough, you know, I got one for like $500, and it took me like months to pay it off. But I called a bunch of, you know, long-distance bulletin board systems, so I got in big trouble for that. But so, yeah, I would check out the documentary, bbsdocumentary.com. It's incredible. It's a couple hours long, but it just totally chronicles the history of BBSs. So, well, it's at the 37-minute mark, and I'm probably going to wrap it up. I just kind of wanted to do a test and to see, you know, see if there was any interest out there. Like I said, I'm probably going to do the show. I still have the main podcast, and I want you to go out there and go to www.boringbeigebox.com and download some of the episodes. You can also do a search if you have iTunes, just do a search on Retro Computing, and you'll see mine in there, Boring Beige Box Podcast. Download the episodes, check them out, listen to them. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, retro computing, you know, definitely listen to the show and join me. You know, I might do a midweek show on TalkShoe, try to see if there's any interest out there during the week, and maybe you can join in and chat and kind of give your experiences of, you know, your retro computing or what you're into now. If you're collecting old machines, I have a bunch of old systems in my garage that I get around and play with sometimes, or, you know, relate stories that you had from when you were, you know, a kid or when you were young, and some of the great tales or experiences you had in the early days with computers. Definitely come on the show and talk about it, and I'll definitely take your call on TalkShoe, and you know, just listen to the past episodes, enjoy them. If you have any, you know, interest, you know, email me. Email address is podcast@boringbeigebox.com. Any comments or suggestions or just stories that you might have. Also, there I do have forums that you can register for if you want to get on the forums and chat. I just recently transition from PHPBB, which is a different, you know, which is a pretty standard bulletin board software, web software, and I had a bunch of people on there. I'd probably say over a dozen or so, and I had a lot of good topics and posters, but I had to switch to actually a much better bulletin board software called Vanilla, because I was getting a lot of fake sign-up accounts, and it was a headache nightmare to kind of I think that people use bots or they use some kind of scripting to do it through Google or something like that. So it just was a headache. So I switched over to Vanilla, which is a lot better. So if you want to register, if you just go to www.boringbeigebox.com and click on forums, you can sign up and request a membership for the forums and chat on there. So, alrighty, well, this pretty much wraps up the show. You know, like I said, this is a companion piece or a live companion show to my podcast, which is called Boring Beige Box. And you can check it out at www.boringbeigebox.com. It is a podcast about retro computing, specifically the era of late 80s, early 90s. It was a time, like I said, when it was kind of a golden age for me in computing, when, you know, it played King's Quest and Ultima 7 and Monkey Island 2 and all the great old school games. Now they're old school, but at the time they were the hottest thing. And it's just a podcast about talking about those old days. If you go to iTunes and you search under podcasts for for retro computing, you'll see my podcast. I've done about 16 episodes. Just download a few, listen to it, and this is the first show that I'm doing on TalkShoe, and probably over the next couple weeks, I'll do either weekly or biweekly live shows where you can call in and talk about or reminisce your old days of some of the first computers you had and some of your experiences you had, and talk about some online services you might have used, like the Sierra Network or Prodigy or CompuServe, some of your early experiences with the internet and web and the World Wide Web, and so it'll just be a great experience. And so hopefully we'll have some people next week. And like I said, download the podcast, sign up for the forums, chat on the forums, or send me an email at podcast@boringbeigebox.com. And hopefully we will be able to reminisce about the old days. So thanks so much for joining me tonight, and take care and have a great week.
This show is brought to you by TalkShoe.
Create your own internet talk show. Check it out at talkshoe.com.